You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to what we think is the Monday Buckeye Talk, unless something happened and we had to move this to another day, and then you'll be like, oh, no, Doug, you moved it. Doug LaMarie, Stephen Meets Nathan Baird. So this is our, like, sort of best of. It's a little half-butted. Many years ago, man, it's like I've been here a long time, but at Cleveland.com, maybe like 6 years ago, we did a whole thing of, like, we did awards. I think we called them the Cleveland.commies or something. It's a little dicey ground when you call something a commie. But we had like all these things, like Bud Shaw and I wore like suits and we had like fake backgrounds and we were at a podium and we handed out statues and it was like best Cleveland player, best this and that. I love that kind of stuff. I'd be up for that. This was sort of like, hey, get some suggestions from the texters and throw it out there. So I apologize. Next year we'll do tuxedos. But what we did is, in the end, guys, you and I sort of talked about it. I changed a little bit from what we had talked about. We did offensive player of the year, defensive player of the year, true freshman of the year, but I smushed them together. I didn't do offense and defense. And the reason is I thought Denzel Burke would run away with it on defense and Trevion Henderson would run away with it on offense, even though there's some other interesting guys at the other spots. I thought they would be the clear winners. So I wanted to make people pick. Now we're curious who wins, Trevion Henderson or Denzel Burke, because they're both very good candidates for true freshman of the year. Most surprising player of the year, parentheses, in a good way, that would appear on the trophy in a good way. And I said I wasn't going to include Jackson Smith and Jigba in there because I thought he would run away with it. But then I did the ranking thing, and I know people make fun of me when I get the ranking thing wrong, but I was ranking, so it wasn't just click. So I thought I will include Jackson Smith and Jigba. And then that way you can still rank, you know, 2 through 9 or whatever, and if he's at the top, that's fine. It doesn't affect it. And then we did play of the year. And here's where I have a terrible memory. Sometimes I wonder how my memory is so awful. And I like to tell myself it's because my life is filled with so many wonderful things. I can't remember the past. But then I realize my memory is ridiculous. I couldn't have thought of one. But the tech subscribers sent in good options. I did 7. And we'll run through those and then see what you guys think. But let's start, gentlemen, with offensive player of the year, and I'm here to be criticized, as always, here on Buckeye Talk. These were the candidates that officially went out. C.J. Stroud, all 3 receivers, Trevion Henderson, Nicholas Petit-Frere. Nathan, is that a fair ballot for offensive player of the year for the Ohio State Buckeyes? Those 6 nominees, or did I do someone a disservice by leaving them out? Or was there somebody I put in there that I should have put in?
I mean, I suppose there's some academic argument as to whether Nicholas Petit-Frere is the best offensive lineman or the only one you should put on the list, but I don't think that person is going to win no matter who you pick. So no, I think that's a pretty good list.
Any disputes, Stephen, with that list?
Nope.
All right, Stephen, who would be your Ohio State offensive player of the year?
CJ Stroud. It's maybe more of a semantic argument than any of them. It's just, you know, no, he's not. He's probably not the best player this year, but everything goes through him. And if he's not the type of player he is, and if he didn't have the growth he is, it doesn't matter how good Jackson Smith and Jigba is because he never has the numbers. And the same can go for Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, and to an extent, Trevion Henderson as well. So CJ Stroud.
I did briefly hesitate on some of the semantics, as we always do here on Buckeye Talk. not MVP, not MVP, because valuable is like, well, it has to be, of course. So it's not, I didn't say valuable. And I was going to say most outstanding, right? MOP, people do that sometimes. But then I thought, well, that's just using fancy words. Outstanding, that's three syllables. Why use three syllables? Player of the year, Nathan, is what I landed on. And then again, you can take that however you want. Maybe to me, it leans a little more outstanding than valuable. If you want to combine the two, whatever. But I did player of the year. Nathan, who would you pick?
I think there was a point this season where I might have picked Garrett Wilson. That was the guy I picked before the season as the one who would emerge as Ohio State's most offensive player as a player. But I think at the end of the day, I would also pick C.J. Stroud. I think that the growth that he showed over the course of the season pushed him through to a place that made everything else that happened with this offense possible.
And I do think, again, I had sort of made the argument at various times along the way of like, hey, if I was doing a Heisman vote, I think I actually might vote Garrett as Ohio State's guy. But then we, you know, the Heisman doesn't include everything for some freaking reason. It should someday. CJ threw for like 900 yards in the Rose Bowl. Right. And Garrett, as it turns out, missed two of the 13 games, which, you know, and CJ also missed one of the 13, but he missed the Akron games. So who cares? And like when Garrett was out, they were fine. So like, I don't feel like that means that I would change what I was saying when I was saying it about who I maybe thought Ohio State's actual best like Heisman candidate was. But after you see the way that CJ finished the year, I also would vote CJ here. CJ won. 1.57 for CJ's crowd. 1 point. Nathan is eating pretzels on his parents' bed. Buckeye Duck. So hold I can't on. Help I, it. I couldn't help but give it away. It just was funny because you coughed and then it reminded me of you being on your parents' bed eating pretzels.
I was done eating pretzels and was having some other problems, some connectivity problems. And because I was focused on fixing that, I forgot to mute myself before I coughed. I have a pretty good track record, almost too good of a track record of muting myself.
No, I'm usually the one that mutes you. So that's true. Usually I just mute you in mid-sentence because I hit the wrong button for no reason. This is interesting. I wonder if people find this in their lives. Parents don't typically have podcast/Zoom level internet connectivity because there was a time I was at my in-laws' house for some podcast over break, and there were some issues with that. And it is a reminder, Nathan, I mean, all of us, you know, we're young. I'm 48. I'm young and hip, but like you got to pay if you're in this business, especially in the pandemic Zoom world, you got to pay for the old internet boost to get that extra signal. And then when you just have a normal boost, like I don't want to assume things. Are your parents podcasters, Nathan?
No.
So they don't need the boost. They just get on the internet and play Wordle or whatever. Right. So like it's normal. And then sometimes the connectivity of just a normal thing. Nathan turned his video off and he stopped eating pretzels. So CJ Stroud wins clearly, but actually it's a little close. 1.57 to 2.16 was second. 2.85 was third. 4.40 was fourth. 4.62 was fifth. 5.39 was sixth. Nathan, who do you think was second?
I think Jackson Smith and Jigba was second.
Steven, who do you think was second?
Trevion Henderson. I do think you can be a bit of a prisoner of the moment with Jackson Smith and Jigba.
Jackson Smith and Jigba was second. Garrett Wilson was third. Chris Olave was fourth. Trevion Henderson was fifth. Nicholas Petit-Frere was sixth.
That's interesting.
So, I mean, people leaned into the receivers, right? It wasn't like the receivers split it and Trevion moved up. This was a passing team. And it's not weird, Steven, but Trevion announced himself with a gigantic game. And then he had some gigantic plays the rest of the year, but he didn't really have a gigantic game the rest of the year. And he ran for whatever, 1,200 yards. He had a very good season for a true freshman running back. Nobody is disputing that. But I do think, Stephen, like, I don't know what, how would we characterize it? Did he maybe, based on what he did when he sort of took over the job, did he not quite explode in the offense as maybe we thought he would the last eight games of the year? Not at all a criticism. And did his job and was really good and was battling a little bit of a nagging injury thing. And they want to make sure they don't overuse him. And he's a true freshman. But I do think there was a time where we thought Trevion Henderson, like, just might go bonkers to end the year. And he was good, but I don't know if he went bonkers.
Yeah. I mean, he had the 152 against Penn State and then he didn't get over 100 the rest of the season. I do think it's more of a reflection of play calling approach than on him, but yet also he's, you know, 18 years old and didn't play football last year, so they probably weren't going to kill his workload every single weekend. But I do think there are often some games this year where if the run game didn't work in the first two series, they just weren't going to run the ball anymore and they just started chucking it around a little bit. Because one thing you did see is I think the less they used Trevion Henderson, the more you saw Jackson Smith the Jigba get involved, just because they were throwing it that much more. And you can't just, I mean, well, unless you're Jackson, it's not going to be a guy with 15 catches every single game, right? And so they were really spreading it around, and all three of those guys were getting 6, 7, 8 catches a game for 85 to 100 yards per game. So I think it's less of a, his production went down. It's just the level of competition went up, but then also Ryan Day just stopped wanting to run the ball a lot of the times.
And, like, they didn't run the ball great at the end of the year. Trevion Henderson, 17 for 83 against Utah, 17 for 74 mm-hmm. against Michigan, 4.9 yard average per carry against Utah, 4.4 against Michigan. As you said, he had that 152 against Penn State. Then the last five games, 92, 98, 63, 74, 83. Nathan, again, awesome year. True freshman, 1,248 yards, 6.8 yards per carry, 15 touchdowns, also caught 27 passes for 312 yards. So that's 1,560 yards from scrimmage, Nathan. That is a ridiculous true freshman year for Trevion Henderson, but he wasn't dropping 200-yard bombs on everybody the last month of the year.
Yeah, and I think when you're an award like this is going to go to maybe a little bit more flash. He had the big flash early on, and then it didn't really quite sustain as far as like those explosions. So I will say with Henderson, it always seemed like he was always on the brink of maybe having one of those games, and you're always ready for it. I just don't know if it delivered quite the same way, as especially the way that Jackson Smith and Jigba surged at the end of the season, where he basically packed an All-American season's worth of production into like five or six games there at the end. And Henderson also just having some weird games where he didn't play the second half contributes a little bit to those totals.
All right. So congratulations to CJ Stroud. I don't know. We're probably allowed to buy him something now, right? You can buy him we can get him like a gift certificate to Chili's. Would that be, I don't know. What can we get?
I mean, he probably made more money than us this past year, so I think he should buy us something. But it is what it
that's
is.
How our awards work. Congratulations. You owe us $50.
Yeah.
CJ, please send us a gift card to Piata. So CJ Stroud wins it. Jackson Smith and Jigba second. Garrett Wilson with the bronze. Defensive player of the year. Steven, did I miss anybody? Up front, Haskell Garrett, Tyreek Smith, Zach Harrison on the defensive line. Linebacker, I put in Steel Chambers. Defensive backfield, cornerback Denzel Burke and safety Ronnie Hickman. Those were the six guys I put out as nominees for defensive player of the year. Is there somebody else I should have added?
No, that's fine. Honestly, I think you can make a better case that you could have cut a name off here than you can making a case of adding anybody.
Who would you have? Well, I don't know. Do you want to say who you think I maybe could have cut off, or leave that to people's imaginations?
I don't know if both Tyreek Smith and Zach Harrison deserve to be on here. I don't know which one should be on here, but I don't know if they both had to be on this list. That's a nice way of saying it.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And Steel Chambers, like, really, like, wasn't like a full-time starter until halfway through the year. So again, we've had the Steel Chambers linebacker conversation before. Nathan, what do you think of those six nominees? Any quibbles?
No, I think it makes sense. And just maybe to respond to what Steven is saying, like that, it's tough to make a distinction between those two because there were times this year where Tyreek Smith seemed like the best football player, maybe not football player on this roster, but certainly on this defense. And then Zach Harrison leads them in important defensive categories for the year. So I don't know who you would leave off either of those two.
Again, like Zach Harrison's like PFF grade is super high, right, Nathan? That's kind of been the case all year.
Yeah, it's fairly strong, especially relative to the rest of this defense.
Yeah. So I will say this before we announce this. Some people had suggested, and I took the suggestion into consideration, like do like a team MVP, do overall. But there was such an imbalance this year between the offense and the defense, how they produced as groups, and then sort of the standout players on offense and defense. Like Nathan, I thought, well, if we do a team MVP, it's just going to be whoever wins the offensive player of the year, right? That it's like what defensive person is going to like bust through the offensive domination by this team. So that's why I didn't bother doing it. Do you think I should have, or do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, this would be no, there was no chance. I think it's a better exercise to let that stand on its own. Nobody on this defense was going to p possibly push through multiple candidates on this offense.
Okay. So Nathan, who is your Nathan Baird Defensive Player of the Year for Ohio State?
I struggled with this because there were just so many places where there were just issues. I think it might have been Tyreek Smith, if he had been healthier and been able to sustain some of the things he did. At the end of the day, I went with the guy that I thought whose consistency gave this defense a chance to stabilize and be good enough, which it ultimately wasn't. So I went with Ronnie Hickman.
Ronnie Hickman. Steven, who is your choice?
Yeah, Ronnie Hickman. I mean, he had 99 tackles as a safety. And basically watched his responsibilities kind of shift in the middle of the year after Josh Proctor got hurt. He's the only one where you don't have to add caveats of, oh, if only he'd have been healthier all year, maybe he'd have been in this situation. He never was a third stringer who had no expectations of playing this year to all of a sudden being the best guy in his room. He was just, maybe it's not even an MVP award this year or a defensive player of the year award. It's just the most consistent defensive player. Who was that? It's probably Ronnie Hickman.
Yeah, it's not spectacular, but it is consistent. The only Ohio State defensive player who made first team All Big Ten was Haskell Garrett. Ronnie Hickman was a second team choice by the coaches and a third team choice by the media. I think I would also say Ronnie Hickman for me influenced in part by the fact that he like made a really big play in the Rose Bowl, which was like a little last thing of like, hey, that guy's important. He did not win for the Texters. And the Texters picked Denzel Burke. 1.85 for Denzel Burke. Ronnie Hickman second at 2.22, then a pretty big gap. Haskell Garrett, 3.70. Steel Chambers fourth, 3.89. Tyreek Smith fifth, 4.55. Zach Harrison sixth, 4.78. Steven, I'm a little surprised. I understand what you were saying, like, hey, maybe you didn't need both defensive ends, but it's sort of hard to pick one. But that they finished like pretty convincingly fifth and sixth feels like people are not overly impressed with the defensive back play. I mean, they finished behind a guy who like started the year as a running back and switched to linebacker. And all we said all year was linebackers aren't good enough. Are you surprised at all that Tyreek Smith and Zach Harrison were fifth and sixth on this list, or does that match the reality or either what you thought people would think of this?
They had a combined five sacks this year. That's why they finished fourth and fifth. Those are two guys where everybody in the world's thinking, oh, this is the next in that great line. And neither one of them are quite that. So that's probably part of it is that if your expectation is already ridiculously high and then you come nowhere near it, then you're going to get penalized a lot more than, you know, Ronnie Hickman is going to get penalized or Denzel Burke or even Steel Chambers if their expectations are not as high. But then also, I mean, to credit them, I think their best moment this year was probably better than everybody else on this list's best moment. I think there's a case to be made there. But at the same time, you know, when they weren't at their best, it was just not anywhere close to what it needed to be for this team to win. And that's why, you know, this defense wasn't as, if those two specifically had been, you know, 25% better than what they were this year, Ohio State probably doesn't have two losses, or at least they don't lose to Michigan.
Tyreek Smith, second team, all Big Ten for the coaches, third team for the media. Zach Harrison, third team for the coaches, second team for the media. So a flip-flop there. Nathan, what do you think of the idea of Denzel Burke winning this thing for our texters?
He wouldn't have made my top four or five. I mean, he ranks like 12th on the team in, well, better than that when you start cutting down for snaps taken as far as their PFF grade. But his PFF grade is fine, 68.8. By comparison, Zach Harrison, 82. You know, Tyreek Smith, 74.9. I think that's a nod to being excited about how good he was as a true freshman and about how good he probably will be someday. And also, if you're talking about value, not just most outstanding defensive player, if someone were interpreting this as value, maybe you do lean a little bit towards him because of just how thin they still were at that position.
Yeah, and it's hard, like, even for instance, like Haskell Garrett. I mean, Haskell Garrett sort of like changed the Michigan State game on the first series of the game and like sort of set the path of what was going to happen with the Michigan State offense in that game. And then like he didn't start against Michigan, which is fine, but like he opted out of the Rose Bowl and, you know, you start running Tyreek Williams and, you know, Jerron Cage and other guys through there. And it's defensive tackle, so it's not as flashy. I get it. But, you know, I don't know if there was a gaping hole when Haskell Garrett wasn't on the field for them. It is one of those things like Denzel Burke compared to everybody else, right? To Denzel Burke compared to like when Legend Cavazos and Ryan Watts were getting snapped. And Denzel Burke compared to, you know, God, what if you wouldn't have had him? I think that elevates his case. And I think a lot of people are sort of thinking that way. And then, you know, you're out there on the island, you're making plays, right? So I don't think it's an unreasonable vote by the Texters. I would have him, if you say you would have had him maybe fourth or something to you, I think I would have had him. I might have even had him second. If I had Heckman first, I might have had Denzel Burke second in terms of impact slash like irreplaceability. Like, man, what if you didn't have this guy? How much trouble would you be in? I don't know if that's how the way you're supposed to do it or not. But Denzel Burke, the winner for the Texters. Go ahead, Nathan.
I should just real quick interject that if as long as I'm mentioning PFF grades, Ronnie Hickman was actually right below Denzel Burke, 67.9. So that's in my eye and in PFF's eye.
Yeah, which, as we say always, PFF useful, not the end all be all.
Right,
right. So
what helps Burke a little bit here is there were some really good receivers in the Big Ten, and he had to face all of them, and he held his own against pretty much every single one of them. And I think that's a, because even early in the season when he was playing pretty well, I think we were all just like, all right, he ain't played no good receivers yet. And then he played David Bell, and then he played Jahan Dotson, and he played Ty Freifogel, and for the most part held his own against every single one of those guys. It's like, okay, this is real. This guy is a legitimate, you know, candidate to be a freshman All-American, and he's now on watch to be the next like dude at corner at Ohio State.
Part of the argument against Burke, though, would be, while the whole defense played poorly against Michigan, he was one of the primary examples of that.
Yes.
Also true. Also true. All right. We will take a quick break. Denzel Burke, I guess Denzel Burke and Ronnie Hickman both owe us a $50 gift card because they kind of split it. Hickman was the media choice. Burke was the texter choice. So they each send us a $50 gift card. We appreciate that. Next up, true freshman of the year. We'll do that next on Buckeye Talk. Doug Nathan Stevens. So I just want to tell this real quick. I was on like a meeting, a company meeting. So I don't know if you guys know, we're cleveland.com, but like we're part of a larger, also, why would you care? We're part of a larger organization. It's called Advanced Media. We have stuff in Oregon. We have a giant presence in Alabama. We have a giant presence in Michigan. We have a big presence in New Jersey. The Newark Star Ledger was a flagship paper. We have a big presence in Pennsylvania. You know, we're not in all 50 states, but we have coast to coast and north to south. You know, we're a pretty decent sized company. So we were having a meeting about podcasts, and I don't know what I'm doing on there, but there's, you know, they're like people who make decisions and deal with money and that kind of thing. And I just want to tell you guys this, and I'm not like trying to, it just like made me feel good. And I just, it's because of you listeners that this is the case, but this is this company. We're kind of all over the place. And they would talk about, well, we want to do this, we want to do that. And they used an example. And the guy said, well, for instance, with our flagship podcast, Buckeye Talk. And it's like, you know, just so you guys know, the listeners here, you're not, you know, this is just not some little like a thing where, you know, some guy sitting in his parents' bed eating pretzels. I mean, it is that, but it's also, you know, with the flagship podcast of our company. So that made me feel good. It should make Nathan and Steven feel good, but it should make you guys feel good because we're that because of you. So thanks to everybody who listens. I hope you know that we appreciate you. And I hope you know that we don't take you for granted. And I hope you know that we try to do our best to serve you guys. And I just wanted to say that because that was a kind of a nice thing to have pop up that Buckeye Talk has a lot of people that listen to it. And we appreciate that. Freshman of the Year candidates. I combined this because I wanted to see what the top two dudes would do head to head. The candidates for true freshman of the year on the offensive side of the ball, Emeka Egbuka and Marvin Harrison Jr. And certainly you take Egbuka's special teams into account as well. Plus Trevion Henderson at running back. Then four guys defensively, JT Tuimoloau, Jack Sawyer, Tyleek Williams, Denzel Burke. I don't think I missed anybody, Nathan, right? I mean, they ended up playing. That's a lot of true freshmen playing meaningful roles for Ohio State. We probably should double back on that. I don't know if that's the largest influx of like, now Egbuka and Harrison, you know, weren't game to game. Sawyer kind of came on more at the end of the year, but honestly, like JT, Tyleek, Denzel, and Trevion, those dudes were kind of there from the jump, Nathan. That's a pretty nice little group of true freshmen helping out, you know, one of the top six teams in the country. I didn't leave anybody out, did I?
No, but I would say Egbuka actually was game to game if you take in his kick return duties, which were, you know, among the best in the league. And it seemed like he was, you know, always on the cusp of breaking one. So no, it was a huge year of freshman involvement and a much needed one, frankly. Like, imagine where they would have been if they hadn't seen that sort of surge of true freshman talent.
And I wish, I know some groups do national groups do like all freshman teams and stuff. And they lumped together the redshirt freshman and the true freshman, like CJ Stroud, excuse me, I think made some like, you know, freshman teams. Cause it's, but it's not the same thing, you know? And like in a world where like redshirting doesn't matter because no good guy stays for a fifth year. And with the COVID year, everybody's a redshirt. First year on campus, man, first year in college. That's what matters to me, that like you got there and boom, you're doing it. That's such a different animal. So this is true freshman, Nathan, who would you pick?
I would pick Denzel Burke. And I think for me, the deciding factor between him and Trevion Henderson, and maybe this is unfair, but it was pretty close in my mind. But we sort of expected Trevion Henderson to get here and do this. And to some extent, and Denzel Burke arriving and doing what he did was not only unexpected to this level, but also critical for, again, giving this defense any chance to be in the position it was late in the season.
Steven, who do you pick?
Quick thing real quick. Donovan Jackson is the only five-star who was an original member of the 2021 recruiting class who did not start a game for Ohio State this year.
McCord, Egbuka, Henderson, Sawyer, Tuimoloau.
Yep. And then like obviously Quinn's like the three class. So that's why I said original five star member.
Original recipe, Quinn's like, yes. Extra crispy.
Yeah. The extra crispy that like immediately, no, it's the extra crispy that you forgot to actually like get from the other window because it went back to Texas.
That actually is what this is like. I mean, we're all doing more takeout in the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
Do you guys, when you get the takeout, do you make yourself go through the bag? Like if you have multiple orders, because usually I'm getting takeout, I'm getting it for four. Do you make yourself go through and double check that you have everybody's order? Or do you just think, I don't want to open the bag. I'm sure it's there. And you just go home.
It depends on where you're getting it from. Sometimes there's places that you know are reliable and they they hit it every time. And then there's other places that, based on past history, are a little sketchier. So plus, it's usually just me and my wife. We're only getting for two, so it's a little harder to screw up two than four.
I check now because all it took was for one person to mess up my order, and now I do it every single time. I'll hold up the line to do it too.
There are times when it feels like to me like I would rather run a marathon than open up the bag and go through, unstack the stuff and double check. Are the pot stickers at the bottom? We ordered the pot stickers. Are the pot stickers in? It's just like, I don't know. I just want to go home. So sometimes I don't do it, but I feel like that's almost like Ryan Day was like, okay, I got my order. And he went home and he's like, oh, I got my JT, got my Sawyer. Yep. Did I get my, was it, we got my, yeah, got the egg buka. Yep. A little side of, I got a McCord appetizer, right? I didn't want to try to, ooh, this Henderson looks really good. I'm surprised. I never had this Burke before. This is good. And then it's like, forgot my Ewers. God, they owe me, Steve Sarkisian owes me an order of Ewers right now. What are you doing, man? I did think Quinn put out like a Twitter photo the other day. I thought he looked older. It's like he, I don't know if his neck got thicker like Pete Warner or what, but I thought like, you know, Texas agrees with him. So good luck to Quinn Ewers. He didn't start for Ohio State this year, no matter how many people predicted that he might.
There's no place like
home. Nathan, you picked Denzel Burke. Steven, do you pick Trevon Henderson or Denzel Burke?
Yeah, I went with Denzel Burke just because given how the state of things were, I think the defense needed Denzel Burke to be what he was more than the offense needed Trevon Henderson to be what he was in this season, if that makes sense.
That does, because as we said, they just chucked it all over the place. And so if they were playing Mayan Williams or Master Teague, would that have prevented them from chucking it all over the place? Probably not. As good as Denzel Burke was, I would definitely vote for Trevon Henderson, because if we remember back in the old days, let's go way back to the old days, to the first two games of the season when Trevon Henderson wasn't starting. And we were like, what are you doing? Start him. And remember like when he didn't play that much and then they threw him a 70-yard screen at the in the Minnesota game. And we were like, what are you? I don't want Master Teague and Mayan Williams to play ahead of him. Stop it. And then he just came in, and now I'm like, oh, we only ran for 91 yards. What's up with that guy? He's so explosive. It's so obvious to anybody just watching it, the difference between a back who's a difference maker and a back who's good. And we just got the absolute clear indication of that this year. And I agree. I mean, I agree that probably maybe Burke was more valuable in the sense of, well, if you didn't have him and the guys behind him, we saw the, you know, could you have gotten through the year with Mayan Williams and Master Teague and basically been the same team? I guess, but I would have been screaming the whole time, Nathan. I would have been like, this is not good enough. What? They need a more explosive running back than this. And I know the Mayan Williams stands are saying, Doug, you're crazy. But I just thought it looked like, yes, that's what this is supposed to look like. And again, I've said before, I think maybe if he starts against Oregon, maybe they beat Oregon. So it's like, well, what would have been the difference? It's like, well, they played him earlier. They might have won the game they lost early on and then made the playoff. So it's close, Nathan, but I would definitely go with Trevon Henderson.
I think if you are voting just on, like, you know, as you're saying, if it's outstanding player, if it's just who played better this season, I can see voting for Henderson. I do think that the impact, I understand the argument you're making. I think the game-to-game impact of Burke was still more crucial, if that makes sense.
This is the difference between most valuable and best player. This is where that comes to collide itself a little bit.
And it's one of those things, like, again, I would make a case that Henderson was still very valuable. But if the counter argument to, well, no running back is all that valuable when you've got this passing game, like, they'd be fine. They'd just throw it more. If they gave it to Henderson 17 times, they would have given it to somebody else 12 times. They'd be fine. That's hard to refute that, like, you can, when the passing game is so good, as we said, sometimes every piece of our analysis was potentially invalidated because Ohio State can just chuck it on you. You can also say, like, well, I don't know. The offensive, I just get it out of there and get it to Jackson Smith and Jigman, let him go. Well, I don't know. The tight ends, well, I, like everything else maybe doesn't matter all that much because the quarterback and the receivers are so good. But I would make an outstanding, I think, and a valuable case for Trayvon Henderson. Steven, who do you think the texters picked? And I'll preface it by this, you guys. The vote was 1.65 to 1.67. That's how tight this was. So this is like legit people. And then third place, who's JT Tuimoloau, 3.81. So that's, I mean, it's clearly these two guys. It's that tight. It's basically split. Who do you think edged out with the victory, Steven?
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a little shocked that JT was third. But I think Trayvon Henderson edged out Denzel.
Nathan, what do you think?
And I'll say Burke edged out simply because the same voting body had voted him the defensive player of the year.
Yeah. And had Trayvon fifth in offensive player of the year.
Yeah.
Trayvon won. Trayvon 1.65, Burke 1.67. JT 3.81, Tyleek Williams 4.74, Emeka Buka 4.81, Jack Sawyer 5.27, Marvin Harrison Jr. 6.05. I'm not surprised JT was third. Steven, who did you think might be third?
I thought Tyleek might be third. He was second on the team in sacks. And when we did a ranking of Ohio State's like top 15 defensive players like a month ago, he was like stupid high for the Texans, almost to the point that we had to go, okay, we have to calm down a little bit. I understand what he's doing is pretty crazy, but a lot of it is coming in garbage snaps at the end of the game or against tired defenses. You know, everybody was just so all in on Tyleek Williams that it just felt like he was just going to be third on this list.
And we do, like, I don't think he played 200 snaps. I don't have the PFF grades up.
183.
How many JT play?
I'm looking right now. Hold on 1 second.
I think JT played
286, so like 100 more snaps.
100 more. And production matters, right? I mean, again, Tyleek to do what he did at 183 snaps. I would put JT third. Nathan, who would you put third behind the obvious top two?
It's tricky because, yes, I think JT Tuimoloau had a more game-to-game, snap-to-snap, bigger impact. I understand that Williams led in or had more sacks. But some of those were coming, you know, second halves and things like that. Man, I don't know. I don't know who I'd pick. I might pick Emeka Buka third.
Really? I mean, it is pretty it is pretty close. I think there are cases to be made. I think in the end, JT was their third defensive end this year, wasn't he? Or was Javonte Baptiste third?
If you want to go by snaps.
I mean, JT started for like two games alongside either Tyreek Smith or Zach Harrison. With
John Baptiste had about 50 more snaps than Tuimoloau.
I thought Tuimoloau like belonged from the jump. I thought he made impact at times. I thought he played enough snaps that it wasn't your fresher. That's the only reason you got pressure on that because you're playing against tired offensive line. It was kind of like second half against the backup. I thought he was like a real dude from the jump. And like, you know, if they would have needed him, I think he could have done even more. And they didn't need him. And I thought it was like almost like a perfect freshman year for a guy like that. I thought in the end, I don't know that statistically it was, but I thought in the end it was kind of similar to Chase Young's freshman year. That like there's guys ahead of you for sure. And again, it's like JT was third, probably Chase was fifth, but with the rotations and stuff, I mean, I think JT probably played a few more snaps than Chase did, but you got a sense the impact was real. You knew they were dudes. They didn't have to rely on them, but yet they could have, if they needed to, and you got a sign of things to come. So I thought that was a really productive freshman year for JT Tuimoloau. All right. Let's go to most surprising player of the year in a good way. And I gave 8 candidates for this, and I was influenced by the texters on this. I sent out my original list and said, I think these are my candidates. Tell me if I'm missing anybody. I will say there was a couple guys, especially that I didn't have Noah Ruggles on this list originally, and that was an oversight by me. So that was well done by the texters to remind me of that. So on special teams, it's Noah Ruggles. Defensively, it was Tommy Eichenberg, Steel Chambers, Ronnie Hickman. And people really wanted Ronnie Hickman in this surprising discussion, even though it's like, well, he's like a candidate for best defensive player. And again, this was, you can't be a true freshman. So Denzel Burke's not in here. So it's Hickman, Chambers, and Eichenberg on the defensive side. Cade Stover has a little bit of both, mostly tight end, but a little bit of linebacker. And then also offensively, Jackson Smith and Jigba at receiver. And then DeJuan Jones and Matthew Jones, the Jones brothers on the offensive line. Those were the eight candidates for most surprising player of the year in a good way. Nathan, did I miss somebody? Did I screw it up, or was that an okay list?
That sounded pretty good. I didn't write down all those names, but that sounded pretty right if you're not including true freshmen.
And I didn't include Cody Simon, and I did include Eichenberg. And I know it was like Steven was on Simon Island early in the spring at a time when we thought that Dallas Gant was going to be the starter. I could have included Cody Simon, but like Eichenberg was kind of lower ranked in the recruiting. And like, even though Simon, maybe you didn't think was going to start, maybe I should have included Simon. I don't know.
No, this is fine. If the argument was between those two, Simon is just doing what a top 100 recruit does. He's on his normal, progression here. Tommy Eichenberg is, he's coming off being Rose Bowl MVP with like 17 tackles. I don't think anybody would have thought that was in the cards for him.
And I don't want to have too much recency bias, but like Cody Simon was hurt for the Rose Bowl and Tommy Eichenberg was the defensive player of the year for the Rose Bowl. So I don't know. It influences a little bit. It's 1/13th of the season. Mm-hmm. Okay. Again, the candidates, Jones, Stover, Smith and Jigba, Hickman, Chambers, Eichenberg, Ruggles. Nathan, who you got for most surprising player of the year? And this, again, is some personal preference of your own expectations versus the guy's performance versus what the wider expectations were. I don't know what the white right to think about it is. What did you think, Nathan?
Before I reveal my answer, I want to say, and I'll take a very small cut of this, but assuming DeJuan comes back, he and Matt Jones should get together in some kind of NIL venture around the concept of being the Jonas brothers, like the Jones us brothers, something like that. I think there's something there, some t-shirts, some something.
So let me ask, I think I've talked about it on this podcast. Did you guys watch the Jonas Brothers special?
No.
Because no. John Legend, huge Ohio State fan, John Legend, sang a song to the Jonas Brothers on that special that he wrote for them that was called Not Quite the Beatles. And it was actually very funny. John Legend is a pretty humorous.
I like John Legend. I watched something with John Legend in it, maybe. Not so much the Jonas Brothers.
Yeah, it was kind of one of those things. It was like, why is John Legend singing on the Jonas Brothers show? Shouldn't the Jonas Brothers maybe be like serving hors d'oeuvres at the John Legend appreciation show? Like, this doesn't quite seem right. And I say that as a Jonas Brothers. I mean, I love the Jonas Brothers. I watched that the heck out of that show. Multifaceted.
Anyway.
I like it. And I think there are opportunities there. And I do like the idea of like part of name, image, and like, this is now us just coming up with crazy ideas for people, but the Jonas Brothers is as good as the Zach and Jack Zach Attack.
Oh, it's not quite that good. This is a little, this is a little bit more forced, but I think there's something there. They've got guys who handle that. They can look into it. My winner though is on the other side of the ball. I completely dismissed the idea that Steel Chambers was going to be a useful player on this defense. I thought it was a semi-ridiculous how much time that we and other people were giving to it in the offseason, because it's just one of those things that was eating up oxygen at a time when there wasn't a lot to be eaten up. And he turns out to have arguably been like, was he the best linebacker on this team this year? I mean, he's in the conversation as far as like how he was playing at the end of the year. So now he goes into next year as a guy that you sort of count on to be a part of this defense and a potentially a huge part of this defense. So I think it's got to be Steel Chambers.
Steven, what's your vote?
So let me, before I get my vote, the problem with the Steel Chambers thing is I don't know how much of that is a credit to him actually just being a really good linebacker, and he should have just been a linebacker all along, which the point of, he probably should have just been a linebacker all along. And how much of that is like not necessarily because of what he was doing is or because of what everybody else wasn't doing. So I don't, that's why he can't win for me. It's Jackson Smith and Jigba. The dude broke the record for the most receiving yards in the Big Ten in a single season. And I understand he's really good and he's a five star and he's, but Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave exist. And he just spent the last 5 weeks proving that. Not, we had a discussion earlier this year about ranking these three receivers. And I think I was the only one who said that Chris Olave was third on this list. I mean, that's factual now. Jaxon Smith-Njigba is clearly the best of those three receivers. And nobody thought that at the beginning of the year. In fact, it would have been okay to just assume he'd have been not really getting the ball that much because Chris and Garrett were going to get the ball. Nobody thought the Nebraska game or the Rose Bowl, especially not, these games were not supposed to exist for him this year. That's ridiculous what he was able to do.
If Steven would have offered like a prediction in the preseason, it was like, oh, what do you think Jaxon Smith-Njigba is going to do this year? If Steven would have been like, I think he's going to set the Big Ten record for receiving yards in the season, we would have had a like get off the podcast moment. Like I would have been like, what are you talking about? Stop saying ridiculous things. And that's what he did. So that is also my vote to the extent that like, I wasn't going to put him in the balloting because it's like, who's the most surprising year? I would say the guy who had the greatest receiving season in Ohio State history as the third receiver in the offense, who had like one catch that mattered last year. It's like one of the most surprising seasons in Ohio State history. Steel Chambers, it was sort of like, well, I don't know. We don't really have any linebackers. Steel Chambers was like, I can do it. And they were like, okay. And that is not to dismiss that. Because, Nathan, I agree with everything you said. I did dismiss it. I thought it was like, whatever. DeMario and Steel Chambers changing sides of the ball. It doesn't matter. But Jaxon Smith-Njigba broke like 10 different records. It's insane. He is a surprise at like the highest level. So I thought it was so obviously Jaxon Smith-Njigba that I was going to remove him from the category. And then I decided, no, I'll keep him in. So Steven and I vote for JSN. Nathan, are you persuaded at all by anything that Steven and I said? Or are you like, nope, it's Steel Chambers?
Yeah, honestly, I kind of had forgotten that Jaxon Smith-Njigba was in here because I was thinking of it only in terms of less obvious people. But I guess what I would say is, the fact that Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Jaxon Smith-Njigba forced some changes in the way that they arranged that receiving core before the season, right? I mean, even going back to the spring, like he was I thought he was more of a known commodity. It doesn't surprise me that he had a productive accumulation season.
But there's a difference between a productive season and breaking the Big Ten's record for most receiving yards in a season. Those are not on the same playing field. Like, yes, let's take it. Let's really take it back to the spring. If Jameson Williams doesn't tear his ACL, there's a good chance he might be the first receiver taken off the board. And Jaxon Smith-Njigba made him go to Bama. Like,
You're arguing in my favor, Steven, because what he did this fall is reflected in that. Like the fact that he pushed him out.
But Nathan, if we had said to you before the year, Jaxon Smith-Njigba is going to break the Big Ten record for receiving yards in the season, not only is he going to lead Ohio State in receiving, not only is he going to lead the Big Ten in receiving, he's going to have more receiving yards than, is that right? That's what it is? He's going to have more receiving yards than anybody ever in the history of the Big Ten has ever had. That would have sounded ludicrous. Wouldn't it have sounded ludicrous, Nathan?
Yes, I suppose. I think if you had said to me before the year that whoever plays all those slot reps for Ohio State would do that, that wouldn't have been that surprising, whether it's him or somebody else.
No. Yes, it would have surprised you. It would have surprised all of us. None of us would have. I understand they use their slot. But dude, none of us were thinking this was on the table for him this year. I can't even allow you to think that it wouldn't have been surprising. None of us were thinking Jaxon Smith-Njigba was going. We were having a conversation of how many catches he was going to have in comparison to those two and Jeremy Ruckert. That's where our conversations were in the offseason and the preseason
but that was also dictated by how the targets in that offense had been distributed under Justin Fields, and it was a completely different animal this year.
No, we know how it happened.
Surprising.
We know how it happened. We just can't believe it. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's the idea that like, hey, their linebackers are struggling. Let's put Steel Chambers on defense. As surprising as that is, it actually makes more sense to me than Jaxon Smith-Njigba did something better than anybody in the history of the Big Ten had ever done. But guess what? The texters agree with Nathan. And that surprised me. 2.72 for Steel Chambers, 3.89 for Jackson Smith and Jigba. No, excuse me, 3.09. So pretty close, 2.72 to 3.09. Then Ronnie Hickman, third, 3.50. Noah Ruggles, fourth, 4.05. The Jones brothers, DeJuan Jones, 4.23 is fifth. Matthew Jones, number six at 5.76. Then Tommy Eichenberg at 6.10 and Cade Stover at 6.55. I am really surprised, Nathan, that the Texers, that enough, you know, enough of the people who voted went that same way. I just thought the magnitude of Jackson Smith and Jigba's Rose Bowl would kind of just wash over anybody. You think what you think, but did you think, the Texers will pick JSN? Or did you expect them to pick Steel Chambers?
I'm not surprised that they picked Chambers. Again, he wasn't even a linebacker until preseason camp. He wasn't a linebacker, and now you're arguing about whether or not he might have been their best linebacker by the end of the season. Like, maybe he should have been a linebacker all along, doesn't change the fact that he hadn't really repped at all at linebacker until the preseason, was not even really on the field all that much to start the season, and now all of a sudden is, by the end of the year, you're talking about him having to start to make this defense as good as it could be. I think that matters.
Steven, are you surprised the Texters pick Steel Chambers?
Yeah, I'm pretty shocked. Jackson broke a bunch of records.
Yeah.
It's just that simple for me.
I mean, nobody's disagreeing. It's not like Steven and I don't think Steel Chambers was surprising. And it's not like Nathan doesn't think Jackson Smith and Jigba was surprising. It's just like the magnitude of it. And I really thought, I wasn't even going to put it in. I was like, wow, it's the Jackson Smith and Jigba award. Back when we did those Cleveland.commies, it was like we had an award that was, it was like the LeBron James award. This is how long ago we were doing it. It was when LeBron was still in Cleveland. It was like the LeBron James award for the best Cleveland athlete. Cause it's like, well, we take LeBron out of the category because if he was in the category, he would just wins every year. So that's boring. So we named the award for him and took him out. I was almost going to make this the Jackson Smith and Jigba most surprising player of the year, because I thought it was so definitely going to be him that there wasn't a point to having him in the category. So congratulations to Steel Chambers. You owe us $50, not money. Gift card, because sometimes if you get like the gift card thing, maybe you can buy a gift card for yourself and then you get another one for a discounted rate. So it shouldn't be $50 out of pocket. And again, any fast casual chain is acceptable. We're not picky about this stuff, but thank you to Steel Chambers for that. Last break, we'll come back with play of the year. This is a little more complicated. We'll do it next on Buckeye Talk. All right, 614-350 if you want to do things like this. Vote. Voting. Everybody should vote. It's a good practice for voting. I had a trouble, and the texters saved me in trying to come up with plays of the year. Steven, if I said to you, like, what is an obvious nomination that should be on the list for play of the year? What's a play that would leap to mind for you?
Without getting specific, any play that either leads to points or crazily shifts momentum.
Well, that was not an option for any of the texters. Any play that leads to points. I got slightly more specific than that.
Oh, okay.
So like for instance,
okay. Momentum shifting points. Then let's say that.
No. I'm asking you a single instance. It's third and seven. CJ Stroud drops back to pass.
Oh, you want to actually give a play? Okay. The Rose Bowl touchdown.
Okay.
I was trying to not do that yet. No, but if you just want me to get to it,
you understand what I'm saying.
Okay.
A play. Yeah.
Okay, fine. Play. Yeah. The over the shoulder throw, the Jackson Smith, the Jigba to go up in the Rose Bowl.
Okay. That is one of the seven. That was one of the seven that got nominated. Nathan, do you have a play beyond that one that would leap to mind?
I think that play does sort of encapsulate a lot of this season and was probably going to be the one that won for me as well.
So you don't have another one. You have another one.
The only other one that kind of along the same lines was in the Rose Bowl. Also Hickman's fourth down tackle that made that win possible.
That is another one. So there are two Rose Bowl plays. Those are the two plays. The Jackson Smith and Jigba over the shoulder touchdown catch and the Ronnie Hickman stop on fourth down. Other plays that were nominated as suggested by the texters. two plays from the opener, which I thought was interesting, but people were jacked up on a Thursday night for the Minnesota game. The Zach Harrison strip sack and fumble return for a touchdown by Haskell Garrett. You guys remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
And the Trevion Henderson screen, 70-yard screen pass, kind of put that game away, that sort of announced Trevion Henderson to Ohio State. And I like people sort of did pick some things, like not just the play itself, but what the play represented, right? So that was like, hey, Trevion Henderson is here. Jerron Cage, 57-yard big man scoop and score fumble return for a touchdown against Penn State. People like the big man plays. Is that an appropriate play to have on this list of seven?
Yes, because one, it's a big moment, but then also the antics afterward of everybody on the sideline fanning him while he's just staring off into space, tired as all can be, because he's probably never ran that far before in his life. It was amazing.
And the extraneous stuff does make it kind of fun, so I like that kind of stuff. Chris Olave's record-breaking touchdown for most career touchdown catches at Ohio State. I do think that's a 43-yard touchdown catch against Michigan State. That matters, right? That he, it's the ball he had after the game, that it was a moment in Ohio State history that, I mean, it was kind of just like Chris Olave being Chris Olave and CJ Stroud being CJ Stroud, but like, you don't want to take that for granted. And it was really, really meaningful. So I thought that was certainly one worth it. And then one from a loss, Garrett Wilson's 25-yard leaping catch against Michigan, kind of at the front pylon where he went over the DB and did his Garrett Wilson in the air kind of stuff, put Ohio State ahead early in that game. Nathan, is that an appropriate one to add here? It isn't a loss, but it was kind of felt kind of big at the time.
Yeah, I think that can, it's not going to win, but those are worthy candidates. You know, a play can be memorable even if it doesn't carry you to a victory. I mean, honestly, like, the most memorable plays from the season are going to be ones that other teams had, arguably.
Yeah. No, that is true. Like the Blake Corum run with perfectly blocked by Michigan, the CJ Verdell run up the gut that stuck a knife in Ohio State, the third down stop on Trevion Henderson when Ohio State came out to start the second half and just ran and decided that's how they wanted to attack. Mm-hmm. So yes, I agree. Some people did want negativity. I like it when we try to think, congratulations on your award. And people are like, go negative. Negative's more interesting, Buckeye talk, which often can be the case. But I don't know. I mean, again, whatever. We know what went wrong. I mean, I don't want to give people awards for it, right? Especially amateurs. So we didn't do that. We did positive stuff. Those are the nominees. Covered all the nominees. So it's 3 defense, 4 offense. And the 4 offensive plays, you know, CJ Stroud's being CJ Stroud, but it's 1 each for the receivers plus 1 for Trevion. So it's like the 4 best skill guys represented. And then it's 2 defensive scores and a big defensive stop. So those are the nominees. Steven, what would you pick?
Yeah, I'm picking the over shoulder throw to Jackson Smith and Jigba. I just feel like that is that play, that throw to that connection encapsulates the season. It was the entire theme of that game of how many times can those two play catch and it actually get to a win. And I think it also is like the springboard into what we might just see a lot more of this next season. And I mean, they needed it because they were in the middle of a comeback.
Nathan, what would you pick?
Yeah, I'm going the same thing. And it's also more, it has the unique aspect of being both like the arguably biggest highlight of this season and also like the biggest like announcement of what could happen next season. It's both things. It's like the ultimate piece of achievement for 2021 and the ultimate sign of hope for 2022.
And Ryan Day afterwards said, did he effing catch that? Right. There's that, which also adds to it. So, you know, guys get excited. I did sitting at home on my couch watching that game. It's like I screen grabbed the TV angle of it because they had one of the cameramen like right in the end zone. And so you get like Jackson catching it over his shoulder, but it's a full on shot of Jackson. And then like behind them is like the rest of the Rose Bowl and the mountains, people love the stinking mountains. So like it's almost like one of those two. I think we think about it like with Eddie George, and I think like Antonio Pittman and some of those like a play that you could take a picture of, and you could take a picture of a play as an Ohio State fan and hang it on your wall. You could hang that picture on your wall and it'd be like, what's that? It looks cool. And then you'd be like, oh, here's what that was. And it'd be like, wow. So that one, Texters voted for that. That, and again, this was not a rank. This was just Pickett. 44% of the people voted for that. From a only like football perspective, I might vote for the Hickman fourth down stop because it was like sort of an individual play in space. That's like, hey, you've got to make the play here. And it's a football play and it helps swing the game. And as you said, Stephen, all these things were happening within the context of a comeback. So they're all connected, but as like magic, you can't, I mean, it's not like the Stroud JSN throw wasn't a football play, but it's like, man, a fourth down stop, especially for this team, right? That like, this is, they didn't make a ton of plays like that. I was almost tempted to vote for that just from that standpoint, but from the all encompassing thing, I think it's hard to get away from the JSN thing. Steven, I'm almost surprised it didn't get more than 44%, given yeah. like how spectacular it was.
And it's like, it's almost a lot of CJ Stroud's best throws this year were to Jackson. And this was, and every time it got better and better, whether it was the throws over the middle, over the sideline, or when Jackson basically caught a Michigan cornerback and the ball at the same time to keep a drive alive. And then you have this one. I mean, yeah, this touchdown catch basically won you the game because yes, Utah came down and responded, but then you came down and, you know, drove and got a field goal. So this is basically the drive that won you the game. I'm a little jaded by the Hickman fourth down stop. It's a great play. I don't want to take away from that, but he also had some moments basically in the drive before that fourth down stop drive that almost also cost Ohio State the game. So it kind of evens itself out a little bit because he had some bad coverage plays, which I think were the two worst plays of his season. And then he backed that up with the best play of his season. So I'm a little jaded by that one. But yeah, the Jackson and CJ, this is just like the magnum opus of like seven or eight moments throughout the season. And they needed it. It's the fact that they needed this touchdown and they needed every single play that happened between CJ and Jackson, especially in that game, that adds to it.
Nathan, 44% for that play. Does that seem low to you?
A little bit, just because I thought recency bias would maybe win out there. I suppose, I mean, you could even argue, I guess there were some other throws in that game that even though they weren't the go-ahead points, were even more critical. Like, you know, the fourth down touchdown pass to Marvin Harrison, like as far as like got to have it in the moment was maybe a little bit different. So, but I think it probably, when I look at that list, as far as impact on the season, as far as lasting impact in Ohio State lore, like one of those, all those other plays, fun plays, I don't know if any of them like goes into consideration for like lore other than maybe this catch. And it's especially because of what those guys could do next year as a pair. Again, as I was saying before, then it becomes like, well, you know, people are going to be talking, you'll see it on broadcast next year. Like, well, you know, Jackson Smith-Njigba has 180 of CJ Stroud's 400 yards today. And it all got started last year with that season they had. And here was that catch they had in the Rose Bowl. Like, I think it's going to be sort of a defining moment for this connection that they now get to build on.
And I do think the two Rose Bowl plays are kind of like the only two plays on the list that like won Ohio State an important game that you didn't have. They didn't, as we've talked about, they didn't win the things they want to win. They didn't beat Michigan. They didn't win the Big Ten championship. They didn't win a playoff game. So like a play that had impact, it's like, well, you get to the Rose Bowl. It's like, well, I mean, season's kind of, you know, you already missed the playoff. How impactful can the play be? But what's the other nominee of a play that like got them over the top, like a game winning touchdown catch or a game saving? Oh, it's tooth and nail on this sack save. Like the Joey Bosa 2014 throw the running back into the quarterback in overtime against Penn State kind of thing, right? Like that they didn't have really a play like that this year.
The Harrison strip sack and Haskell Garrett takes it back for a touchdown was a pretty significant moment for momentum, but it still doesn't necessarily measure up. There's still a gap between what that is and then what these two plays are, especially since they're in succession of each other like that.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, the play that Steven just mentioned and the Cage fumble return against Penn State, if you take either one of those out, it changes the complexion of that game, but it's not the same as what you're talking about.
So, Nathan, what do you think finished second? 44% for the Rose Bowl catch. You got to get 19% for the number two play. Any guesses?
I think it's going to be either the Henderson screen pass because of like that being sort of like the moment that he arrives, or the Olave touchdown catch just for sort of nostalgia.
Steven, what do you think?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go Henderson screen pass. The Olave thing was awesome, and I don't want to take away from it at all, but there was so much happening in that first half of that Michigan State game that it can almost get lost in the wind a little bit because they were just scoring every 2 seconds. So I'll go Henderson screen pass.
It's the Cage return, which just surprised me. I don't know why. I guess
love the big man.
They love the big man. 19% for the Cage return was second. The Olave record-breaking touchdown was third at 11%. Fourth is the Hickman fourth down stop at 9%. Fifth is the Henderson screen at 7%. Sixth is the Harrison strip sack and Garrett fumble return at 5%. And last is the Garrett Wilson 4% for the Garrett Wilson touchdown against Michigan. So I don't know how we get, I guess Jackson Smith and Jigba and CJ Stroud could get together and combine for the gift card for us for winning that award. So, and maybe everybody who was part of it, maybe the blockers, right? You could all guys chip in. All right. Those are our awards. Nobody cares about them. I think we're right at the edge of moving on, right, Nathan? I think we're holding out. So we're going to do state of the program, I think, next week. And that is a texter survey that I really want to do. And I really want to talk about state of the program in a lot of different areas. And we wanted to get the coaching staff settled before that happened. And the coaching staff is settled. And so we wanted to do that so we knew what people were voting on. We didn't want you voting on like last year's staff. We want you voting on what it is now. So I think that will be our big pod next week. And I also think we're going to take Tuesday off. So we're dropping this for you on Monday. I would expect us back on Wednesday. So don't look for a Tuesday pod unless something happens. But then, Nathan, I think once we do state of the program, I think we're ready for a projected depth charge. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I think we're definitely at that place. I mean, there's still some decisions to come out. Sounds like from what he posted very cryptically on Friday that Zach Harrison expects to be back at Ohio State next year, so we can include him. But there might be some other positions that we are still kind of waiting to finalize some things.
I'm actually looking up when, I guess, January 6th. Mid-January.
17th. Like, I think it's the 17th is the deadline.
All right. So that's like the day you're listening to this podcast. So once that's cleared, then we'll have another sense of that. Like, okay, will this guy go in the NFL or not? Because if Zach Harrison's here at Ohio State, we certainly will project him as a starter. And if he's not, then you got to project somebody else. So I think that's good that we waited on that too. So look for that next week, and then we'll start looking ahead to the 2022 season. And that will flip the calendar to a new season of Buckeye Talk. For now, thanks to you guys for listening. For Nathan Baird and Stephen Means, I'm Doug LaMaurice, and that was Buckeye Talk.